This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Hey, what's up? It's me, Dave Stone, former co-host of the Boogie Monster podcast. From 2016 to 2023, myself and my good buddy Kyle Kinane, we'd get together each week, ramble on about ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, other mysteries of the universe. At least that was our initial intentions. But if you've listened before, you know that it usually devolved into disjointed rants about vans and fried chicken. During that time, we also had a Patreon page. We would offer up exclusive bonus episodes to our patrons, usually in the form of Q&A sessions. And even though the Boogie Monster is currently on an indefinite hiatus, we're offering up those old bonus episodes to the general population so that everyone can enjoy our old nonsense. Hopefully, someday soon, we'll dust off our microphones and resurrect the Boogie Monster. But until then, please enjoy this blast from the past from your old pals, Kyle and Dave. Thanks for listening.
And we are rolling. No intro, no nothing, just cut to the chase. It is the Boogie Monster Patreon Dave's Kitchen Q&A. I am your host, Dave. How are you guys doing? Leaving the windows open today. You might hear some street noise. It's such a beautiful day. I didn't feel like shutting the windows. Don't have an actual podcast studio. Just my trusty dining room table and my mic. And I'm watching my lovely fiance, Katie Strandberg, fold clothes right here in the living room. Hi. Doing a wardrobe change. She's cutting all the sleeves off of her shirts.
My new thing.
Because it's getting warm, and she's got a bit of a Larry the Cable Guy vibe about her. As I say that, I myself am rocking a sleeveless tee. So just both a couple of real hooligans over here. Got a real white trash vibe we're putting off with our aversion to sleeves. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well. Thanks again for your patronage. I know that that phrase is used in other contexts outside of the Patreon. I don't know. I don't even know what you call the Patreon. Was that not crowdsourcing, crowdfunding? I don't know. But yeah, like when a restaurant has a sign, we appreciate your patronage. I don't know. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate your fucking $4 a month. How about that? That's an easier way to say what I'm trying to say. Yeah, changing it up a little bit the last month or two. Normally might do a Dave's Kitchen video with one recipe. But I thought since we're all quarantined, we're all cooking a lot more. Rather than to limit it to just one video and one recipe, thought we'd do some Q&A sessions, much like our regular bonus Q&A. But the Dave's Kitchen version, obviously, as you can deduce, we're only talking food. So, got a lot of good questions here this month. I appreciate you guys chiming in with your questions. And without further to do, let's get into it. Let's. I always like to start at the top. People who chimed in first, get your answers. Get your questions answered first. So here we go. So kicking it off with Chris Olaus. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. Chris Olaus. What is your favorite meat on a stick? Well, that's a hell of a question. And that just seems like the perfect way to kick off Dave's Kitchen Q&A. My favorite meat on a stick. I mean, that's kind of an age-old question, you know, the old meat on a stick. But you don't see many meats on sticks anymore. If you go to an Asian buffet, you'll see some meats on sticks. They're very fond of the just the regular, like, the marinated and grilled chicken on a stick. Just, you know, I don't know. But that's all right. It's not bad. My gut reaction is a corn dog. I guess that would qualify. Half of it's meat. The other part, I guess, would be a corn batter, cornbread batter. But yeah, I think a corn dog qualifies as a meat on a stick, obviously. Big fan of corn dogs. You don't see those as much as you used to outside of the circus and carnival circuit. But, yeah, I love a good corner. I'm trying to think of what other meats are on sticks. I mean, I know you got shawarma, you know. Well, shawarma itself, not necessarily. I guess that starts on a spit, and then they shave it off. But in that cuisine, what would that be? Is that Persian? What do you call Mediterranean? Turkish.
Mediterranean, Turkish.
Yeah, the bob, the kebabs. You know, you get a shish kebab. That's a meat on a stick. I like, yeah, doner kebab. Is the doner the sandwich or is that on a stick?
It means shaved meat.
Oh, it means shaved meat.
I worked there for 4 years. I have no idea.
Yeah, Katie and I met at a god-awful doner kebab place. Place fucking sucks. I'll give them a shout-out. Spitz. They got rats. And the owner sexually harassed Katie. I'm going off on. I'm glad that happened. That didn't happen while I was employed there, or else we'd have had more trouble. And I'm still trying to figure out that guy's address. Right. But that's okay. That's a story for another time. Boy, just right out of the gate, really wandering off the path here. But yeah, favorite meat on a stick, Chris. He's like, I'm just asking a question, you idiot. I don't want to hear about all your. Past, anyway, yeah, that place did kind of suck though. It's like, just overpriced hipster yuppie food, in Los Feliz, California.
It was unclean.
Rats. But hey, the good thing that came out of that place was meeting my fiance.
Yay.
So, she was a bartender and I was in the back shaving meat and, just a couple of star-crossed lovebirds, the stars aligning there in the kitchen of Old Spitz. And here we are, what, 7.5 years later?
Yeah.
Engaged. It only took us 7 years to iron out the kinks and decide to move forward with our relationship. It's a food podcast today, though. I'll shut up about all that. You're doing great over there, Boo. She's full. Bless her heart. She folds my underwear.
This is love.
Yeah, that's love. So, yeah, thank you there. All right, moving on, guys. $4 a month. This is what you get, all right? Anus Man ask. That's a good handle there. the Ass Man. Reminds me of the Ass Man episode in Seinfeld. But I'm not the Ass Man. Well, according to the state of New York, you are. Anus Man asks, tri-tip or brisket? That's an easy one. Brisket all day. Not a huge fan of tri-tip. Not enough fat on the tri-tip. I like a fatty beef. All right, and we'll get to that. Somebody else asked about brining beef. We'll get to that one in a minute and talk more about that. But tri-tip, I mean, you know, tri-tip's fine. But brisket, obviously a lot more fatty. Fat equals flavor, and flavor equals Happy Dave. So always I would choose a well-done. Now, assuming you're cooking them, all things being equal, you know, you're cooking the brisket properly. And but yeah, I'll take a properly cooked or smoked brisket over a properly cooked or smoked tri-tip any day. That being said, I'm not gonna throw tri-tip in the trash. I'll still eat that stuff, but brisket, it's an easy choice for me to choose the brisket over the tri-tip. Moving on, Victoria Wood asks, "What's your favorite go-to meal when you're pressed for time?" That's a good question. Favorite go-to meal when I'm pressed for time. Now, do you mean meal, like something I'm going to cook or just something I'm going to prepare? Like, to me, the best quality to time ratio food would be like a sandwich. You know, I love a good sandwich, and if you know what you're doing, you can prepare a nice sandwich in under 60 seconds and be out the door and on with your day. But, Victoria, I'm going to assume you mean something a little more substantial than just a snack or a sandwich, an actual meal. I'll tell you, probably, as far as flavor and taste to time ratio, man, the way I cook my steaks, good steak is easy. And now, granted, you need to keep it out for about 30 minutes to bring it up to room temp. But assuming that step is not in the time equation, the 30 minutes of letting it rest and or letting it not rest beforehand, but bringing it up to room temp. But once that thing is ready to go, I can cook a nice juicy steak in about 4.5 minutes, you know, just searing it. And this is just the cast iron skillet method, not necessarily the method. I have a couple of different methods. The method I'm talking about now is just hot heat on a cast iron skillet, little oil rubbed all over the steak, little salt and pepper, maybe a little something else, if you maybe a little cumin, maybe a little chili powder, but for the most part, just salt and pepper, a little oil on the steak, high heat on that cast iron skillet, boom, about two and a half minutes on the, on one side, flip it, boom, two and a half minutes on the other side. That second during that time, that second half is cooking, throw in a knob of butter, get a little basting going on there. You can also throw in a couple of garlic cloves, and boom, yeah, four to 5 minutes cook time, and then let that thing rest for about 10 minutes. So that is a real quick and easy meal when I'm pressed for time. Sorry, I'm all clogged up today. Oh, boy. Trying to think of some other good, quick, easy meals. One of my favorite meals when I was poor as shit, very recently, a couple years ago, I was living with Ryan Singer, and we both were broke all the time. And this is actually one of my cookbooks. I forgot which one, but what I call broke folks rice and eggs. I had a rice cooker back then. So throw in a little rice in the rice cooker, and while that's cooking, I would scramble up some eggs and saute a little onions and garlic, and maybe even crack open a cheap can of black beans, warm that up, and then mix all that together, rice and beans and scrambled eggs and onions and garlic and butter and salt and pepper. Oh, boy. Good times. What'd you say?
Frank and Beans.
Frank and Beans is a good, quick, easy meal. Frank said, he was masturbating. What's so funny about that scene, if you know what we're talking about? When it's something about Mary when the special needs brother catches, he thinks he caught Ben Stiller masturbating, but he wasn't even, well, was he? No, yeah, he was trying to zip his fly up and he got it caught in his dong. But when they're rolling him out in the stretcher, the brother says it one time, and then on the second time, he puts more emphasis on it, like maybe more emphasis than what a mentally challenged person would know to do. I don't know why that cracks me up. He goes, he was masturbating. He was masturbating. Oh, let's make fun of retarded. Okay, you can't even say that. No, I'm sorry. No, I know you can't say. You can't say retarded anymore, David. No, I'm not trying to be insensitive. I know you're not supposed to say that anymore. But that was funny. Like the way he put the emphasis on it when he said it the second time. He was masturbating. Oh, boy. How the hell did we get there? Oh yeah, that's that's Katie's input from across the room. What are you doing now, boo? You got
I don't know. I got rags.
She's folding rags. We got some shop rags, some kitchen rags. We got way too many rags. Trying to cut down on the paper towel. So I suggested we move over to like a shop rag situation for the kitchen. Anyway, there you go, Victoria. A good steak is quick and easy. The eggs and rice is quick and easy. I'm trying to think of something. When I'm pressed for time. What's that? Oh, yeah, good PB&J. Oh, here's a real obvious basic thing that I've been doing for Katie over there. PB&J, don't be afraid to throw that, to treat it like a grilled cheese. Ooh. Get that bread a little toasty and get that peanut butter and jay a little melty. And, yeah, I've been making a PB&J, and then I'll just throw it in the frying pan with a little bit of butter, about 30 seconds on each side. Just get a little warm, a little crusty there. And, that's a good time. So, yeah, there you go, Victoria. Thank you for chiming in with that question. That's a good one. Lee Singleton, my buddy Lee. How's it going, Lee? Lee asks, what is the restaurant you are most looking forward to visiting once the quarantine is over? Lee, I think you may know the answer to that. Lee's actually invited me. I couldn't make it last time, but he invited me. When was that, Lee? A couple months ago. Lee, I believe, lives in Pensacola, Florida. He was out here on business or pleasure or something in L.A. and asked me to go to Howlin' Ray's. The restaurant I speak so highly of and so frequently of, Howlin' Ray's, Nashville Hot Chicken. I know you guys are probably sick of hearing me talk about this. We talk a lot, talking about it a lot on the Boogie Monster, but it is without a doubt the best sandwich. Oh, hold on. My alarm. Best sandwich I've ever had. Not the best chicken sandwich, the best sandwich of any type that I have ever had is at Helen Ray's in Los Angeles. They do the Nashville hot chicken and the regular chicken. You can get that too. It's great. Regular meaning, you know, they have chicken on the bone. You can get thighs, wings, breasts, whatever you want. And it's amazing. Nashville hot style. But the sandwich, and you know how I feel about chicken breast. All right, I'm not a huge fan of chicken breast, although they use it, they do it right. I don't know what they brine it, and then they do the Nashville hot thing to it with the breading and the sauce and oh, the spices. But it is the best sandwich of any type I've ever had. You got a huge chicken breast that they pound out. You know, you pound those suckers out and you make them look about three times bigger than they actually are. Once you dredge it and fry it and all that. And then they have like a vinegar-based coleslaw on top of that, house-made pickles in there, and then what they call a, what do they call that, a get-up sauce or a get-down sauce? Or anyway, it's basically like a garlic aioli, kind of a spicy garlic mayonnaise type thing. And oh boy, is that great. So yeah, I would say that's the one I've been missing the most. I've been missing some barbecue. There's a new pop-up that I tried in L.A. that before the quarantine, they were only open on Sundays at the Smorgasbord, kind of this big outdoor food court downtown L.A., called Moose Craft, M-O-O-S Craft, Moose Craft Barbecue. And I had a real small taste of that right before the quarantine. Went up there and got a little bit. I got there late in the day, so a lot of the stuff was already sold out. But, oh, boy. That was good too. So probably a Helen Ray's and Moose Craft are the two that I'm going to hit up as soon as this is all over. So, yeah, thanks for checking in, Lee. Moving along, Christopher Mulkowski. How much of the fat cap do you trim before smoking a brisket? Do you have a particular favorite kind of wood? I'll answer the second question first. Yes, my favorite wood in regards to smoking barbecue would be hickory. Huge fan of hickory wood. Just the overall flavor that it imparts is really nice. And of course, I'm assuming hickory trees are somewhat native to. There you go. There's some street noise. Get them. I'm assuming hickory trees are native to the southeastern United States because we sure had a lot of access to it when I was living in Georgia and in those parts. But yeah. Love hickory wood. I love apple wood. I love cherry wood. Any fruit tree wood, it's going to be nice. Not a huge fan. I'm not going to turn my nose up at it. But Texas, they're big into mesquite and white oak. I feel like hickory has more of a unique flavor after you smoke that sucker. But yeah, all right. First question: how much of the fat cap do you trim before smoking a brisket? Fat cap is kind of what it says, big fatty cap. What is that? The deckle muscle of the brisket? I think that's the deckle. Getting some edibles going here. Oh boy. What's the name of that that kind? What's the brand name of that?
Plus.
Yeah, plus. Oh, yeah, sorry to be chewing into the mic.
L-U-S, plus.
The plus.
Power water.
Watermelon gummies, oh boy.
Gonna go help.
Oh, it's trash can time. Katie's a good neighbor. She's helping bring all the trash cans down. Anyway, all right. Christopher, I'm sorry, dude. I'm easily distracted today. Fat cap, how much do you trim? The entire brisket, I always try to trim between a quarter and a half inch. Meaning, not trim a quarter. I want to leave a quarter to a half inch of fat. So yeah, when you're trying, some of these briskets come, you know, there might be an inch and a half of fat in some parts of it. But I try to trim everything, down and leave about a quarter to a half. You know, it's hard to get, you know, you don't want to. May not necessarily want to break out a tape measure and get down there and really get it exact. But, you know, you can kind of eyeball what a quarter inch or what a half inch looks like. What is it? Your thumb, the top part of your, not the thumbnail, but the top part, the joint, that joint in your thumb to the tip of your nail is usually about an inch. Well, I guess it depends on how big your thumb is. But, yeah, maybe So about half that, about the nail, you know, about a quarter inch to a half inch would be about the length of your thumbnail. So that gives you some point of reference there. But yeah, you trim off less than that or more than that. If you have less fat than that, then you're risking drying out that brisket, and you definitely don't want to do that. And if you leave too much on there, then it's just not going to cook properly, and some of that fat's probably not even going to render down. So, but yeah, so half inch to a quarter inch. Sorry for all the noise there. That's what happens when you leave your windows up and you live in the city. What else? Joel Micah Harris. What's up, Joel? Joel, I believe, is the fellow who's made some amazing art for the Boogie Monster. Very talented, very cool style of, what would you call it? Just like comic book style illustrations. Very cool. Anyway, Joel asks, what are two ingredients or foods that surprisingly, secretly taste great together? That's a great question. I've never been a huge, like weird combos, weird combination type guy. Like, you know, oh, my favorite thing to do is I'll take peanut butter and I'll put it on a hot dog. Like, man, that's not that weird. But you always run into folks who've got these own personal weird combinations that they like to do. I don't really have any of those. I trust tradition. You know, I like the traditional pairings. I wouldn't say I'm a super adventurous eater in that regard. Like, I'm adventurous in that I'll try pretty much anything. But I'm very traditional in that I like the classic flavors, the classic combinations. But my goal is I always want to just find the best version. You know, give me the best version of a Nashville hot chicken sandwich. Give me the best version of baby back ribs. Give me the best version of mashed potato. Whatever it is, just basic traditional pairings and flavor combinations, but I just want the best version as opposed to just weird, freaky combinations. And I'm not shitting on, you know, if you got a special thing, a special combo, that's fine. But nothing has really struck out to me as far as, you know, putting odd combos together. I guess the closest thing, this isn't that odd, but I haven't heard a lot of people doing this. I love watermelon in the summertime. Just getting some nice fresh watermelon, and I will put salt on it. I like salt on watermelon. To me, it just really brings out more of the taste of that watermelon, more of the freshness and the flavors of the watermelon are brought. And that's what salt does in general, if you don't know. Like, some people think, I mean, salt definitely, you can eat salt by itself and you can admit that, okay, yeah, there's a taste there and there's some flavors there. But the real purpose of salt is just to bring out and enhance the flavor of whatever it's on. So, yeah, I guess that's what it's doing there with the watermelon. I'm trying to think, I'm sorry. You would think Dumb Old Dave would have all kind of weird combinations that I like. But, yeah, that debate I got on Twitter last week, you know, and we addressed this in the last episode. I just said, you know, you don't need cheese on every sandwich. And, oh, how could you say? I know most of you guys were just joking, you know, kind of fake outrage. But, yeah, I mean, I know the knee-jerk reaction is like, what the hell are you talking about? Cheese is great. And yes, I love cheese. Big fan of the cheese. I'm saying on every sandwich. I didn't say any or all. But certain sandwich. Anyway, well, guys, like, what about a PB&J with cheese? And, like, dude, no, I'm sorry. I mean, I haven't had it. It might be okay. But, like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that doesn't.
There's a couch outside.
Yeah.
Call 1-800-JUNK.
Our neighbors moved out yesterday and left a damn couch on the sidewalk. Okay. All right, moving along. Alexander Hackle. Have you ever made homemade pizza? I've tried it once in a cast iron skillet. The rising dough and not enough sauce turned it into cheese bread. Have not. You know what? That's something I have no experience in, is making pizza. And I would say Italian food in general is one of the major cuisines that I'm not super well-versed in. I mean, I make a killer lasagna. I make a nice marinara and meatballs. But that's about as far as I go on Italian food, as far as stuff that I've made. I like Italian food. That's just one of those cuisines. You know, growing up in the South, not having any Italian heritage or any Italian family members. Italian was just something that was, you know, an every now and then type of thing. It wasn't as part of big of our daily culinary lives as it is with some, you know, Italian people or other people who just happen to like that. Oh, boy, I'm rambling. But no, Alexander, I've never made homemade pizza, although it sounds that is something, you know, if done right, that sounds like something I could do very well and make it nice and tasty. But doing it in a cast iron skillet makes sense. But I get what you're saying there. Too much dough, not enough sauce. You just got a big old pan of cheese bread, which, you know, I'm not hating on that either. But yeah, maybe that's something I'll look into. I did used to do, what was that thing? Do they still make the Boboli? The buy-it-yourself crust, and then you do everything else. You buy the crust, and then you do everything else yourself. I used to do that back in the day. It was always good, not great. It never turned out, you know, as good as, like, you know, a good pizzeria could do. But anyway. William Shoulders asks, I was wondering what are some of your favorite snacks to have while drinking? I've always seen bars and stuff hand out peanuts and such to eat, but I can't eat peanuts since I'm allergic. Not really sure what to eat with my Jim Beam and Coke. Found out Sour Patch Kids were not a good choice. Any suggestions? Also, I just turned 21 on the 6th, so if you have any cocktail suggestions, let me know, because I've tried an old fashioned and I did not like it. There you go, William. Well, happy birthday, William. 21. Welcome to the team, young man. wanted to know what cocktails he could get into. Well, you already got the one there, the Jim Beam and Coke. That is probably, well, not probably, that is definitely my favorite cocktail. Definitely drink too many of those. Got to figure out how to switch over to Beam and Diet. And I've tried, nothing drops off further. There's no bigger drop-off in taste than like a Beam or Jack and Coke compared to like a Beam or Jack and Diet. Something about the way the bourbon and the whiskey mix with that whatever, that artificial sweetener, that saccharin, that what do they call? What's the big thing that's in all the diet shit now that's bad for us? Aspartame. I don't know. Just that combination. Ugh. I just absolutely can't stand it. And I know you're not supposed to. I try not to just sit around and drink soda recreationally. I only drink soda with my booze. But, oh, do I love a Jim Beam and Coke. And that's a good question. Like, what does it pair with snacks? And, I mean, this is something you do have to consider. Here's another thing I love. I love a peanut M&M, right? And oftentimes I'll grab a handful of peanut M&Ms when I'm cutting loose with my Jack and Coke. But the problem you don't want to go sweet if you're already having a sweet cocktail. The peanut M&Ms, as much as I love them, you take a bite of that M&M, and by the time, you know, if you don't let a few minutes go past, if you hit that Jim and Coke too quick after that, the sweetness of the M&M takes away from the sweetness of the Coke. So it makes the Coke taste a little less sweet, maybe a little bitter if it's having to follow the M&M. That's why I like to do savory snacks when I'm boozing. I love a Cheez-It. Oh, the little just silly basic cheese crackers. Cheez-Its are very popular for me. I love a good salt and vinegar potato chip. Ooh, pretzels. Oh, okay, here we go. Those pretzel chips, but you find them like in the deli section of most grocery stores, like, do what?
The pretzel chip?
Yeah, what's the name of them? Well, they're in the chip section, but you also see them a lot in the deli section. Yeah, because they're trying to pair them up with some of the little cheese case. When I say the deli section, you know, like you got the deli where, you know, you can buy your sliced ham and whatnot, and then maybe they got the fried chicken and the hot food and but then they got a case full of cheese, all the specialty cheeses, the soft cheese and the hard cheese, and around there, oftentimes I will see the pretzel chips. You also find them on the chip aisle, but they will sometimes put them out there near the cheeses, hoping that you will get the pub cheese or the pimento cheese or any type of cheese spread or cheese dip, and pair them up with those pretzel chips. And that's good. Boy, I love some good pub cheese and pretzel chips. But yeah, pub cheese and pretzel chips is good. Cheez-Its is a good time when you're drinking. Potato chips, anything salty. You know, that's why they put the peanuts out there at the bars, or at least they used to. I don't know. I haven't seen that lately, especially now. No one's ever going to eat out of a community bowl of snacks after this corona thing. But yeah, there you go. I'm rambling. But try some Cheez-Its, try some pretzel chips with some pub cheese. Oh, boy. Good times. Duncan McDonald asks, where, in your opinions, are the best wings you've ever had, and or do you have a good wing method? Great question. I'm assuming you're talking about hot wings. This is going to piss a lot of people off. For the most part, hot wings are hot wings. For the most part. Because there's just only so much you can do with them. And I love them, by the way. Now, that being said, I'm talking the traditional method would be to fry in a deep fryer some wings for 6 to 8 minutes until they float, and then you toss them in a homemade wing sauce. And we discussed this on the latest episode of The Boogie Monster. Even though I've told Kyle this about 5 times, he acted like he just realized that he was very surprised to learn that wing sauce is simply hot sauce and butter. Now, yeah, you can add a little bit, you know, you can add some other spices and whatnot, but traditional buffalo wing sauce is primarily hot sauce mixed with melted butter. If you do them right, if you fry them and you have a good sauce, wings are wings. That being said, baked wings blow. That's why I never get wings from Domino's or Pizza Hut or anything, because it's those frozen wings that they throw in the oven, and it's just not the same. A baked wing is just not the same as a fried wing, as a traditional. And when I say fried wing, I don't mean breaded. Katie and I have butted heads over that in the past. These are just honest mistakes that that wing amateurs just aren't going to notice. But I remember, what was it, Super Bowl or something? Maybe it was Super Bowl. Yeah, we were living with her dad a few months ago, and she was like, "I'm gonna take care of the snacks. Super Bowl snacks. Here we go." And she went out into like a nice specialty place, like the intentions were good, but it was a wing. It was a chicken place, not necessarily a wing place. I think it was more of a chicken place. And she got me about a dozen wings, but they were the. They were the breaded, like little fried chicken. And I love fried chicken. But when I want wings, I'm talking about unbreaded, fried, and tossed in wing sauce. Something about a breaded chicken wing, it just doesn't scratch the same itch. Because at that point, might as well just go get some good fried chicken. To me, a good wing is just... First of all, you got to have good chicken. You can't have the cheap, frozen bullshit. You got to have good quality chicken parts and chicken wings. And then you fry those, you deep fry them, and then you toss them in a good wing sauce. That being said, wings are wings in that regard. Now, I know there's a lot of variations, and I've had wonderful wings. I don't know the place, but I know this is, you know, pretty obvious, but when I was in Buffalo, New York, I'm assuming the birthplace of the buffalo wing. I went to some legendary, iconic place. I forgot the name of it. Had some wings. They were amazing. That being said, there's just if you do them right, I'm not talking about the bullshit frozen baked ones, but if you do them right, there's just only so much you can do to a wing. So my point with all this rambling is I prefer a smoked chicken wing. The best wings I've ever had are at the Albert in Atlanta, Georgia, where I used to work. Best smoked chicken wing. It's insane. What they do is they take chicken wings and they put a nice rub on them, nice barbecue rub. I can't remember exactly what their rub was, but salt, pepper, garlic powder, maybe a little paprika, maybe some onion powder. But you rub those wings down nice and good. You toss them in. We toss them in a big, like a dish pan. What do we call those things? Anyway, it doesn't matter. We'd take like 3 pounds of them, and we'd throw them in this big pan. Not pan, but like a tub, a dish tub. Duh. Big plastic dish tub. Like a 5-gallon dish tub. Take about 3 pounds of wings, throw them in there. We'd hit it with our rub, and toss them all around. Make sure the rub's all nice and evenly distributed. distributed. And then we'd smoke them for about 4 hours over hickory wood. And you smoke those suckers, and they get nice and like a nice mahogany brown and just a beautiful color. And then what we'd do, now you could do it just that. If you smoke them long enough, you can smoke them and cook them to completion in the smoker. But what we would do, we'd cook them about 85-90% of the way. Then we'd pull them off. And then we just we'd keep them, you know, in the refrigerator. And then when somebody would order them, we'd take them and throw them in the fryer for about 30 seconds. So you got this smoked wing that is now tossed in the fryer, and we wouldn't toss it in any sauce. So it was just, it tasted like ham, like just the smokiness. It just tasted like you were eating a little ham nugget, and it was just, oh boy, smoked chicken wings. And I do have that recipe, by the way, in volume one of my Kitchen Survival Guide. If you guys haven't picked that up yet, feel free to at dumbdavestone.com. And yeah, I'll throw this offer out again. I mean, you guys are patrons. You've obviously got disposable income if you're tossing around $4 a month. So you may not need to take me up on this offer, but if you do need to, if you need some recipes and you're in a bind, I will gladly send you those cookbooks for free. They're e-cookbooks. It's just a PDF file. So, you know, no sweat off my back to just send an email. But anyway, that recipe is in volume one of my cookbook. So, yeah, a smoked chicken wing is just, to me, if done properly, much more exciting than a regular buffalo wing. And I love buffalo wings. I'm not shitting on buffalo wings. I'm just saying there's only so much range. And I like a buffalo wing. You go to Buffalo Wild Wing or some of these national chains, like some of these, you know, we got 30 different flavors. Okay. I mean, I'll mess with a garlic parmesan a little bit, maybe a teriyaki or something. But first of all, I don't need barbecue sauce on a hot wing. Okay. Take that shit and throw it in the trash. And then some of these other, you know, and I don't get into the whole, you know, Johnny Swaggercock, Triple X Habanero, blow your dick off, hot sauce. I don't get into that either. I'm not trying to burn out my esophagus. I'm just trying to eat lunch. So I never understood people that took a little too much pride in their Scoville units when it came to the hot sauce and the wings. Smoked chicken wing. If you're ever in Atlanta, check out the Albert. It's in the Inman Park neighborhood, and it's just absolutely delicious. If done right, it's one of the most tasty things I've ever had in my life. So there we go. Who was I talking to there? Duncan? Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Duncan. All right, moving along. Cody Bishop, Dave. My roommate and I have been using the grill more lately and want to cook up some yummy steaks and some sort of nice cut of meat. We are working with a basic Weber grill and charcoal. Any cuts of meat you prefer, any good marinades or recipes you can recommend to help us make a great piece of meat. Thank you, sir. Great question, Cody. Talking about steaks, that method I just told you about, how I like to sear a steak in the cast iron, I love grilling. I love a charcoal grill. I love cooking and eating outdoors. But in all honesty, the best way to cook a steak is in a cast iron skillet, whether it be on the stovetop or you're using the broiler or oven method, whatever. Something about grilling a steak. Now, I do like that flavor. I love that charcoal flavor, that open flame grilled meat flavor. The problem is real easy to dry it out that way. Here's what I suggest. Rather than cooking a ribeye or New York strip on your Weber grill, go out and find you some flank steak. It's the different names. It's flank steak, flat meat. I always find that funny. There was like a Mexican grocery store where I used to live. They always had these like hand painted signs, flat meat, 99 cents a pound. I always thought flat meat was funny. Oh boy, I got some weirdos out here on the street. What am I trying to say? Yes, get you some skirt steak, some flap steak, some flap meat, carne asada. What I'm saying is, it's this cheaper cut of meat, and it's real thin, and it's if you know what I'm talking about, I'm sorry to be redundant, but if you don't know what I'm talking about, how would you describe it? It's not like a single cut, like a nice. It's not cut like a nice little ribeye or New York strip. It's just a big flappy piece of meat, for lack of a better description. But it's real thin, and if it's cut right, you cut it real thin, and it's like you're cooking a washcloth, basically. It's like you're cooking a thick washcloth. Does that make sense? Like it's not as sturdy and compact as like a filet or a ribeye or a New York strip. It's just a floppy, flappy piece of beef. But here's the thing. You don't have to cook it long because it's real thin, and it really benefits from that charcoal and that open flame flavor. And here's what you do, all right? Chimichurri sauce, one of the easiest things in the world, and it goes great with this type of grilled meat. Make you some chimichurri sauce. Here's what you do. Get you a shallot, chop that up. Maybe get you a jalapeno or some sort of chili pepper. Chop that up. Three or four garlic cloves, diced up real fine. Half cup of red wine vinegar, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, half cup of finely chopped cilantro, quarter cup finely chopped flat leaf parsley, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped oregano, and then you need about 3/4 of a cup of extra virgin olive oil. And then you just mix all that shit up. And boom, I mean, you can puree that. You can just mix it in a bowl with a whisk or a spoon, whatever you want to do. But yeah, just the olive oil and the parsley and the oregano and the garlic and you know the chili peppers optional if you don't want it too hot. Maybe leave out the peppers, but it's just this olive oil, cilantro, parsley. Like salad dressing. Yeah, the end product's going to kind of look like a really green salad dressing. And oh boy, you grill up some flap steak, some flank steak, and you pour a little bit of that chimichurri sauce on top while you're cutting that up and eating it. Oh boy, that's a good time for everybody right there. So, guys, and I apologize. I'm all clogged up here, and I know it's awful to hear somebody breathe through their mouth. Into a microphone, but I don't have the COVID, but I think I'm dealing with some like seasonal allergies or something. I can't breathe, so what do they call ASMR? This is the worst possible. Just oh, that was gross. Oh, so there you go, Cody. Get you some flank steak and make you some chimichurri sauce, and you know. You can pause that, rewind it, and get that recipe, or you can just simply—I just Googled right there. That wasn't my own chimichurri sauce because it's so easy and so basic. I Googled it, and that's from BonAppetit.com. So that recipe I just spouted off there. But yeah, if you've never had it, and here's the thing too: so I know some people don't like cilantro. You can leave the cilantro out. You're really. The real star of this show is the olive oil and the parsley and the garlic. And oh boy, that is a good time, making me hungry. So that's the kind of steak I like to cook on a grill. Going back to chicken wings, grilled chicken wings are a good time. You can rub up some chicken wings and grill them on that Weber too. So there you go. Alexandra Honesto, what's the craziest thing you've ever had? I've tried frog legs when I was in Louisiana once. It was weird knowing what it was, but I had it. I had just eaten it blind. I don't think I would have. Or had I eaten it blind, I don't think I would have noticed. Yeah, frog legs. Big fan. Got to eat those when you're down there in Louisiana, Cajun country. Probably the weirdest thing off the top of my head, I've eaten chicken feet. I was shooting a web series years ago. I was in a group called the Beards of Comedy. It was me and three other bearded comedians, hence the stupid name, Andy Sanford, Joe Zimmerman, TJ Young. We toured all over the country. It was before any of us were ready to headline, so we had this clever idea of like, hey, what if we all, you know, we all four combined forces, and then we could fill an hour and a half, since none of us can do that on our own. But anyway, we shot a web series for MSN.com, not MSNBC, but just MSN, Microsoft Networks, whatever that stands for. Shot a web series called Beards Across America or something. You can still find that out there somewhere. But in each episode, we go to a different city and tackle a different topic. And for some reason, they sent us to San Francisco to tackle the topic of like weird food or weird non-traditional proteins. And I think one of the guys ate a bunch of crickets, and I drew the short straw and had to eat a bunch of damn chicken feet. And it was pretty gross, I'm not going to lie. I did not enjoy it. It's not something it's not something I could see anybody seeking out. Of course, I totally understand the purpose behind some of these freak foods, if you will, these lesser popular cuts. You know, it's the Jesus. Apologize for all this terrible sound effects here. What was I saying? Yeah, the whole point is soul food originally. You know, people discarding the cheaper cuts of the cow and the pig and the chicken and whatnot, and then the people. You know, who needed to eat and nourish themselves from that stuff, figured out a way to make it delicious. Maybe I just didn't have the right chicken feet, but the ones I ate, they have not yet figured out how to make delicious because it was pretty gnarly. But yeah, that's probably the weirdest thing I've eaten. Mike Maskey asked, Dave, I just wanted to say, you changed my life. Before the pandemic, I went to Denver Biscuit Company. Until that point, I never had really any good biscuits really ever in my life. Me and my lady are going through your survival guides and have managed to do the cheesy hash brown casserole. Oh, that's good. And the garlic herb chicken. That's pretty solid. Fantastic recipes. Came out amazing. Okay, cool. Not a question, just a statement. Yeah, thanks for buying those books there, Mike. And I'm glad you enjoyed Denver Biscuit Company. Boy. Oh, if you guys ever in Denver, check out Denver Biscuit Company. Exactly what it sounds like. It's a company that sells biscuits in Denver. And, oh boy, real good. And it's a bar, too. So I would sit, I went like 3 days in a row because the place I was staying was literally right across the street. And just go sit at the bar, get me an original Coors. And some sort of biscuit. You know, I think I had a different one every day, but they got the big, you know, chicken biscuit, gravy biscuit. They got a chicken, egg, and cheese. I think they may even have, like, my favorite thing in the world. Oh, God. A steak, egg, and cheese biscuit. Like a chicken fried steak. Oh, boy. Mrs. Winters, she used to rock that back in the day. Hardee's, Carl's Jr., I think, used to have that back in the day. Oh, boy. Sorry. So yeah, good stuff. Thanks for checking in, Mike. Philip Williamson asked, I saw a quote biscuit recipe. They called for self-rising flour, baking soda, baking powder, eggs, and buttermilk. Seems more like a cake situation to me rather than a biscuit. What's your take? Yeah. Now, I'm not opposed to using self-rising flour and baking powder. Is it baking powder or baking soda? One of them. I always get them confused. One of the bakings, whether it be soda or powder, is used as a leavening agent. It's supposed to make the biscuit rise. Yeah, I got no problem, and that's what self-rising flour is. It already has those leavening agents in it. All-purpose flour does not. So when you use all-purpose flour, you need to add in the baking soda and the baking powder to help it rise. You don't necessarily need it with self-rising flour, but hey, I'm all for the bigger the better. The higher that biscuit can rise, the better. So I have no issue with being redundant with using the baking soda and baking powder with self-rising flour. The one question mark in the list you just gave there, Philip, is the eggs. I don't know why you would put eggs in a biscuit recipe. Now, I use an egg in my recipe simply for the egg wash. Right before they go in the oven, I'll beat an egg and then take my butter brush and paint on the egg wash. That adds a real nice color and crispiness and a nice golden brown, almost crispy outer layer crust, if you will, to the biscuit. But putting eggs in the actual ingredient mixture. I don't know what that would do. Yeah, that does seem like more like a cake situation. So, yeah. There you go. Unnecessary, in my opinion, to have an egg in the actual mix of a biscuit. But who knows? I don't know. But, yeah, it kind of sounds like cake to me. Sex Punch Supreme. Sex Punch. I coined a phrase in one of my old bits called Fuck Punch. And something about sex and fuck and punch. I mean, I know on the surface that you should never combine punching and sex, because that is definitely a crime. But in the context of a fun, goofy, consensual relationship, hey, get ready. Here comes the old fuck punch. And I don't know why that's funny. Sex Punch Supreme. What is your favorite piece of meat? Any animal? Just your go-to favorite. I'm a pork boy. I like the pork. Who are we kidding? I like everything. I love beef and chicken. But I think just my gut reaction is my favorite piece of meat would probably be pork ribs or a good pork shoulder. Oh, man. Pulled pork. Or, you know, Cuban pork. What the hell was that? So many weird noises around here. But, favorite piece of meat. Like, if you're talking about, like, a cut of meat that I'm going to prepare, if I only had to pick one, give me that pork shoulder, that Boston butt. There's so much I could do with that. That being said, I love brisket. I love ribs. I love chicken. Oh, it's a tough one. Sex Punch Supreme, so much to choose from. But knee jerk reaction, pork shoulder. Robert Smith. My mom uses a biscuit recipe that consists of flour, sour cream, and 7-Up. Are we white trash? Yes, you are. That being said, very interesting. Flour, sour cream, and 7-Up. Whew. I use beer in my Hush Puppies recipe. I have a Bud Light Hush Puppies recipe. But 7-Up in a biscuit. I feel like I've heard that somewhere along the way. People putting 7-Up in baked goods. But sour cream? Okay. Yeah, I'm not hating that. I don't know. I can't imagine what the finished product would be, but doesn't sound bad. But yeah, you're probably white trash, Robert. That's probably a slur now, right? You can't even call people white trash. Just going to complain about what slurs I'm not allowed to make anymore. Chad Walter, can I get your take on brining beef? Thanks, Dave. Have never done it. I know a lot of people will brine like a eye of round or, you know, some sort of bigger, roast, chuck roast type cut. I've never done it. Obviously, when you think of brining, I think of brining a turkey or even brining, pork chops. But beef is not the first thing that comes to mind when you're brining. But, yeah, I could see the need to brine. The reason you would need to brine something, turkey, for example. You want to brine a turkey because, obviously, there's not much fat. It's a really lean meat, not a lot of fat on there. So it's going to, if you don't brine a turkey, it's very vulnerable to drying out. Same thing with like a pork chop that may not have some of the pork, like a pork tenderloin, very little fat. Certain chops, very little fat. So, yeah, and I could see, something like an eye of round or some of these chuck roast cuts. Very little fat. That's my point, though. I don't mess too much with lean beefs because what's the point? Give me that fat. But no, I've never done it, but I've heard people do it, and some people swear by it. They think it really works great, and it's brine. It'd be a wet brine, I'm assuming, just much like a wet turkey brine or a pork brine. Solution of water and maybe salt, maybe a little sugar, and you can throw some aromatics in there as well, some herbs, some garlic, that kind of thing. But have not done it, but I might look into that, Chad. It's a good question. All right, Evan Morgans, what's your culinary white whale? Something you've tried but never gotten to work? Oh, that's a good question. What Dave's always talking about his successes in the kitchen, but what about those failures? What about those things that have just never worked? Man, I don't have a lot of patience for pie. I'm just not outside of biscuits. I don't do much baking. I've tried some pie. I tried I remember one year, my ex-girlfriend, gal I was dating years and years ago, loved key lime pie. And one Valentine's Day, and this is before I even really got into cooking, I tried to make her a homemade from scratch key lime pie. And I don't know what the hell I did wrong, but I butchered it. That thing was just so tart and just crumbly. And the crust part was dry and crumbly, and the filling part was way too tart and tangy. And it was like eating a pie full of Sour Patch Kids. I screwed that up. But I love key lime pie. So that's something. And I think I tried it again like a year or two later and messed it up too. So probably key lime pie or any type of pies. I've never been super successful at making pies. I just, I don't know. I'm more of a savory guy. So I don't have a ton. You know, I've got a few pie recipes here and there. You know, I make a good chocolate pecan pie. I finally figured that out. That's in one of my cookbooks. But yeah, probably any type of fruit pie. I know I've screwed up key lime pie at least once. I feel like I've screwed up a blueberry pie one time. So yeah, that's just a whole world that I haven't really focused on is desserts. But maybe that's something I can focus on and master a few more good desserts rather than my. I got a good banana pudding. I got a good chocolate pecan pie. Got this dumb Krispy Kreme cake. I do a good blueberry muffin, that kind of thing. Pie is my white whale. Moving on, Sweet Jimmy T. Is there anything more simple and delicious than sautéing mushrooms with a little garlic in butter and wine? Nope, not really. That's pretty great. Ah, Jesus, let me pause. All right, I'm back. Sorry, I had to pause there to go take a couple of Benadryls. I don't know what's going on with my allergies. I can't breathe. You know what I seriously think it is? And this breaks my heart. I may be allergic to my own cats. Because whenever I spend like some real cuddle time with them, whenever I get like really close. For example, right before I started recording, I was laying down on the bed and sweet boy Harvey came and laid right next to me. And we had a moment. He had to cuddle with his daddy, and I love these cats so much, but I think I might have, like, a mild allergy to cats, I mean, which is fairly common. I have several friends who are like, oh, I'd love to have a cat, but I'm allergic, and I always think, well, boy, that'd suck, and that may be what's going on with me. That leads me to the other question. Can you acquire allergies? I just always assume people were born with allergies. Like, oh, this person can't eat peanuts, and that person, speaking of Harvey, he's knocking off all the meds there off the counter. Okay, bud. But yeah, I guess I'll run that one by Kyle. That might be some good fodder for the Boogie Monster. Can you acquire an allergy? Or, you know what, Dave, you could just fucking Google it, and you might have your answer immediately. So, I'm not sure. You guys all right over there?
Sorry.
Let's make it as much noise as possible.
I'm sorry.
While Dave breathes through his mouth. All right, where are we at? Okay, yeah, Jimmy T. Sweet Jimmy T, yes. Sauteing mushrooms and a little garlic with some butter and wine. Oh, boy. Man, shallots, onions. Mushrooms, shallots, onions, garlic, butter, olive oil. Red wine. Oh, boy. White wine, too, I guess. I always cook with the red. I haven't cooked too much with the white, but I'm sure that's something else I can get into. Make a nice white wine sauce for some fish or something. Harvey. See, Katie likes to set up her little end table on the couch. We got this couch, and we got little end tables on each end, and that's where we keep your little drink and keep you. Your whatnot, and she's got all kinds of fingernail polish and allergy meds and stuff going on over here. And now, when Harvey hops up there, He's got fairly decent body control. He's pretty pretty coordinated and fairly graceful. But the tail, the tail's just wreaking havoc on everything around it, just knocking over shit. And, $4 a month to hear me talk about my cats. All right. Savage Cabbage. It's a great handle. I want to try a spin on an open-face sandwich. I was thinking green chili cornbread as the base. You were thinking right, Savage Cabbage. I was also thinking about sticking to the Hispanic side of the culinary realm on this one. Any ideas? Oh, boy. Green chili cornbread as the base. I'm going to do you one better. How about some? How about a green chili cornbread fritter or some fried green chili cornbread, meaning like the pancake? That's what I love. And if I owned a I always told myself if I had my own barbecue restaurant, that's how I would serve the pulled pork on a fried cornbread or fritter. There are variations between like a fried cornbread and a fritter. I think it has to do with how much oil you use or whatever. But I'm basically just talking about a cornbread pancake, okay? Whether that classifies as a fritter or fried or what have you. But a corn, for lack of a better description, a cornbread pancake, I always thought that's how street noise. That's how I would serve my pulled pork, because when I was maybe my first experience, introduction to barbecue was when I was very little. I was like 4 or 5 years old. I was living in Nashville, Tennessee. And my dad, rest in peace, he loved barbecue as well. So it's no wonder I inherited that. But a big barbecue guy. But I remember maybe the first barbecue restaurant I ever went to was in Nashville, a place called Jim Corsi's. I think it was like C-O-R-S-I, Jim Corsi's. And that's how they served their barbecue, on a little cornbread fritter. And that being my introduction to it as I grew older and never saw that again, I always thought, well, what's everybody doing wrong? I thought pulled pork was supposed to come on a cornbread fritter. And I don't think I've ever seen that since then. And that always stuck out. And just because it makes sense. Like, because you're going to eat, if you're eating an entree of pulled pork, you're going to eat that on a plate with some fork. Why not slide a little cornbread fritter underneath it? You know, you're not really changing anything. I mean, I get that it would be somewhat of an open-faced sandwich at that point, but you're not really changing anything as far as you're just eating it with a fork, but you're also scooping off a piece of that cornbread underneath the pulled pork. Oh, boy. Anyway, Savage Cabbage, I like the way you're thinking. I would do a green chili cornbread, fried green chili cornbread, or just your regular cornbread. That would work too, but I'm just thinking a little thinner for this purpose. And then what I would do, if you're trying to keep it Hispanic, will I say that? Hispanic? Is Hispanic okay? Or is now Latinx? I'm not being condescending. I sincerely can't keep up. Whatever people need me to say, I will say. But until I'm told otherwise, I will keep saying Hispanic. I don't know. I feel like I've heard that you're not supposed to say it. I get what you're saying, Savage Cabbage. Yeah, you're keeping it on the Latin American side of things. I would suggest, speaking of pork, I would do like a carnitas, you know, or maybe even a chicharrón. Oh, chicharrón. But yeah, thinking of like a nice Mexican-style pork, like a carnitas or even a pastor. But yeah, take you a Boston butt, a pork shoulder, rub that sucker down with some salt and pepper. Maybe if you got some of that Tijon, am I pronouncing that right? That Tijon Mexican spice, you know what I'm talking about? The red, oh boy, T-I-J-I-O-N, there's an accent in there somewhere. Just kind of an all-purpose Mexican spice rub. So yeah, rub that pork shoulder down and braise it. Put it in a pan. Put about a third, go about a third of the way up on the pork in liquid. Maybe a half. You don't want to go, you know, too high, because then you're boiling it. You got to be careful when you're braising stuff not to just boil it, because very similar setups, but different results there. But yeah, braise it in a pan with some Mexican beer. Oh boy, here you go. Salt, pepper, Tijon, a little olive oil rubbed all over the pork shoulder. Braise it in some Mexican beer. Throw in some garlic cloves. Maybe some onions, maybe some carrots, whatever, and let that pork braise together. Then you got the end product. After about 4 or 5 hours, I would go low. What do I do? I don't have my recipes in front of me, but I think I do like 300 or 275 when I'm doing my beer braised pork. 4 or 5 hours at 275 or 300 and pull that. You shouldn't even be able to, you're not even going to have to shred it. You just poke it with your tongs and that stuff's just going to kind of fall apart and crumble. And put that on top of a fried green chili cornbread fritter and then maybe some sort of salsa barbecue hybrid, maybe some sort of Mexican barbecue sauce. Maybe just take some whatever barbecue sauce you got on hand, throw that in the blender with a little salsa or maybe even a little sour cream. Make a barbecue salsa crema and drizzle that on top of the pork. Oh, God. Whew. I need a cold shower. It's good stuff there. I don't know if the microphone picked up Katie's repulsed. Ugh. Oh, boy. All right. Stormy asks, tell me what you'd pack for a picnic. sounds like a weird ransom note. Picnic. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up, Stormy. Boy, this is just this podcast is just an excuse for me to really get long-winded. I'm not even high yet either. So, oh, boy, I think if I was high, it'd be ramble-tamble. What do you pack for a picnic? I don't know. Off the top of my head, I love fried chicken. Man, fried chicken, maybe a little macaroni salad. I love a good macaroni salad. Oh, man, like when you go to the Hawaiian barbecue joints, and I don't know. I guess that's a traditional side dish in Hawaiian culture. But, man, you go to the Ono Hawaiian barbecue or some of those other chains, get like the beef short rib plate, and they give you rice and macaroni salad. I always say, hey, hold the rice, give me two macs, and something, I don't know what they do to their macaroni salad, and it's not just the one chain, it's I guess that would be a Hawaiian style of macaroni salad. I don't know what's different about it, because it's very similar to all the Hawaiian barbecue places I go to. Man, I'm rambling. Fried chicken, a little macaroni salad, that'd be nice. Maybe a ham sandwich. Oh boy. Okay. Here we go. Stormy, because I perused these and I remember this one popped out. I was going to say, Stormy, I'll wait and talk about the ham sandwich until that question. Whoever asked this question, which is you,
Stormy? Is it the same Stormy?
I don't know if this is the same Stormy or not. I don't. Speaking of which, is this the same Stormy that called into the Stonebergs? Another shameless plug. I'm cross promoting like a bastard on here, but on Boogie Monster. But no, yeah, Stonebergs. If you guys don't listen, I understand. But if you want to listen, no, I just meant, you know, a little self deprecation there. Every Monday, myself and say hello, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
It's my fiance, Katie. Sitting on the couch. But yeah, Stonebergs is Dave Stone, Katie Strandberg, Stonebergs. Get it? Oh, we're clever. And we primarily answer voicemails. So we got a phone number set up. You call in, leave a voicemail, and if it's interesting, we'll play it and respond to it on the show. But yeah, just two idiots trying to give advice that we're not qualified to give.
Yeah.
But what is that? 562-548-2012. If you guys want to call, 562-548-2012. Call the Stonebergs. Leave us a message. Holler at us. Stormy. Anyway, your second question, you say Mike asked. I guess Mike's your husband or your significant other or just somebody you're near who asked you a question. Mike asked, best three-ingredient sandwich, presumably one is bread. Oh, boy. I was just about to say, a good ham sandwich. Here's the best sandwich in the world, okay? Three-ingredient sandwich. Right after Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, whenever you can get a hold of some leftover honey-baked ham. Oh, my God. Now, ironically, I could take her to leave it for the most part on the main, on Christmas dinner, all right? If we got all the fixings and we got a turkey and we got a ham, I'm going to eat some of the ham, but I'm probably more excited about the turkey. I love the honey-baked ham, but here's my point. Leftovers, a cold slab of honey-baked ham on really good white bread, whether it be, it could be, well, I say really good. Sometimes even the shitty Wonder Bread works great, but if you can get a hold of like a nice fresh fresh-baked sourdough or a French or any, you know, a potato bread, any of these artisan bakery style breads. It's got to be fresh, got to be good and fresh. But yeah, that leftover cold honey baked ham on a piece of that bread with some really good mayo, some Duke's mayo, perhaps. Ham, mayo, bread. Get the hell out of my face. I don't know what's better than that. So that's my favorite three-ingredient sandwich. Another great three-ingredient sandwich.